That's it, man. It's game over, man. It's game over.
This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Junkions to a very special episode of Junk Food Cinema right here on FilmSchoolRejects.com. This is the weekly cult and exploitation film cast that is so good.
That ordinarily is so good.
Ordinarily is so good, it just has to be fattening. I'm your host, Brian Salisbury, and I'm joined, as per usual, by my friend and co-host. He's a novelist. He's a screenwriter. He is a lieutenant of Megaforce, and he is somebody I would definitely want to have along on a bug hunt, Mr. C. Robert Cargill.
Hi.
And if you want to hear more of this show, you can find us on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. Our entire back catalog is there. Apparently, that is not true. I know I said that and then immediately said it was not true, so I knew I was lying going into it. I should run for president. Apparently, iTunes only has our last 100 episodes, and we are at like 127, so there's a good 4 months of programming that is missing from iTunes. So,
as opposed to the 4 months of programming that's missing from when I went to make a movie.
Yeah, you know.
When we recorded like two episodes online, it just didn't really work.
You know, there have been peaks and valleys, but definitely the bulk of our back catalog is available.
Peak at your valleys.
Hey-o, question mark. You can also
the nitro back in the box.
Just going to hammer that down. You can also find us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. Well, the reason this is a very special episode and the reason this is a very, very sadly special episode is that we just lost a titan. We lost a giant of the movies that guys like Cargill and I and you guys listening to this admire and adore.
We have been asked several times on our Patreon podcast if there was a Mount. We had referred in an episode to there being an imaginary Mount Rushmore for Junk Food Cinema of our heroes, which we now affectionately refer to as Mount Junk Food.
Mount Junk Food.
And if we had the faces of Mount Junk Food, who would be on it? And every time it's come up, we've always fallen upon Bill Paxton.
Oh, Bill.
And Bill Paxton, here's a guy, speaking of Mount Junk Food, he has a special place in cinema history that I don't know that anyone else is ever going to touch. Bill Paxton, I don't know if you know this, Brian, is the only person in history to be killed by a xenomorph, a Terminator, and a Predator.
Now, guys, this is where you find out a little behind the scenes. Cargill and I do not compare notes before any show. Hilariously, I have a whole bit.
Did I just torpedo your bit?
No. Stepped on it. Not torpedoed it. Crushed it like a kitten on a fetish website, but not torpedoed it. No.
What kind of fucking websites do you go to?
I don't go
Jesus Christ, Brian.
You have seen ABCs of Death 2. You know these websites exist, and they're horrifying. That's not what this podcast is about. I was going to say that Bill Paxton is one of only two actors to achieve what we are going to call a tap. And other critical worlds consider the EGOT to be the pinnacle of prestigious accomplishment. We, however, value the tap recipients. And tap, of course, stands for Terminator, Alien, and Predator. And there is an actor that we are talking about today that has been killed by all three. And that is, of course, Bill Paxton.
And Bill Paxton has had a long and storied career. He was just such a delight on screen. In fact, it didn't really dawn on me until this weekend when he was gone what it was that I love about Bill Paxton so much, which is even in his most serious roles, he looks like he was having the time of his life. Like, it's hard to think of Bill Paxton in a movie or a TV show and not think of him smiling. Mm-hmm. And not think of that winning smile. And not think of how he, you know, even in the smallest bit parts in movies, carried so much weight whenever he walked on.
Yeah.
And it was really rough to wake up and see that news.
I was so upset. I was
we're normally not guys who get upset over this. Like, we understand, like, there's a, you know, life, there's an ebb and flow to life. We lose people. But Bill Paxton is someone, we've done 3 or 4 episodes in the last year that involve Bill Paxton.
I posted on Facebook, on our Junk Food Cinema Facebook, links to the episodes where we've done movies that feature Bill Paxton. There were about 6 of them, plus a patron bonus episode I couldn't post for obvious reasons. So, yeah, it's kind of incredible.
We've talked about 7 different Bill Paxton movies, and that's just scratching the surface of Bill Paxton.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's why we're doing something we never do. This is just a thing. Occasionally, we'll do patron episodes kind of like this. So if you do enjoy this format, hey, maybe become a patron. Get 1 or 2 of these a month.
Patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. Thank you for the segue, Cargill.
We're going to do a top 10 list. We are going to do our top 10 favorite Bill Paxton movies and discuss them. Now, we have not seen each other's lists, so we're no doubt going to be stepping on each other's dicks left and right.
Yep.
But that's going to give us a chance to just talk about that movie, and we'll talk about a dozen, maybe more, depending on how varied our lists are, which I know I've got one thing on my list that I'm pretty sure you don't. I'm curious how many that might be.
I know I have something on my list that you definitely don't.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Yes.
But let me just say this. Before we get into this, because as Cargill said, we don't do a lot of in memoriam episodes. In fact, the last time we did one was like our 3rd or 4th episode of the entire show for Bob Hoskins.
We actually did two.
We did two?
We did one for Elliot LaRoche.
That's right. The Aussie writer we love so much.
The king of Ausploitation in terms of a writer. Very early episode.
Yes, both of those were very early episodes. And since then, we don't do, in fact, we haven't done any in memoriam episodes, but like Cargill said, we have covered so many Bill Paxton movies that he does etch himself a place on Mount Junk Food. And not only that, but I did a little bit of research into Bill Paxton, and I found a couple of things that just made me, it made me hurt even more that he's gone, and gave me validation that this is an episode we should do. One of them being that Bill Paxton is from Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah.
He is a Texas boy.
He's a Texan.
Not only that, but he is technically a Corman University alum.
Yep.
Making his film debut in Jonathan Demme's Crazy Mama.
Yeah.
Jonathan Demme, also a Corman alum. Some people don't know that. And as I said before, he is a prestigious member with Lance Henriksen of the TAP Club.
He has directed 2 films, one of which we covered, one of which I kind of want to cover now. Because it's actually a movie I like that I feel was greatly ignored because it was a family film, a family-esque film starring Shia LaBeouf. Mm-hmm. And as a result, everybody kind of waved it off.
Did he direct Holes?
Stop it.
No, okay. I'm sorry.
Stop it. Stop it right now. The greatest game ever played.
I'm sorry.
And as somebody who doesn't give a shit about golf, Bill Paxton riveted me to my chair for a game of fucking golf.
Yeah.
Like he was masterful. Everyone who worked with him had nothing but great things to say about him. He was just a legend. He was exactly what you wanted. He was as A-list a junk food alum as you get.
Correct.
And he made not only so many great movies, but so many of our favorite movies. Like, so much so, I think what's interesting is when we get into the bottom 3, seeing where each other really falls on which of these movies we consider as our favorite above that.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be really interesting because what we're talking about are our favorite Bill Paxton performances. And one amazing thing about Bill Paxton that I actually had cemented for me over the weekend was how he could actually raise the quality of the overall film with his performance.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk about some movies that are legendary and fantastic that he is a part of, but I think we're going to talk about some movies that aren't necessarily of great quality that get elevated by his performance in
this
that
is
movie.
Also, this is also true.
So this is going to be a very interesting discussion, but before we go any further, just want to just echo how heartbroken we are that he is gone. I'm so young, 61, like way too young to be going.
Yeah.
We're very sad to have lost him, and I'm sure you guys are too, because if you're listening to this, if you've been listening to the show for a while, I would hazard that you are just as big a Bill Paxton fan as we are. So let's dig into this, starting with Cargill. What is your number 10 on the list?
Before I get to my number 10, I want to get to an honorable mention.
Ooh, great.
An honorable mention, one that would have made my list for its importance, except it does not really qualify. It is his directorial debut, a music video from 1980 called Fishheads.
Fishheads.
Oh my God, Fishheads. If you grew up in the 80s and you were interested in counterculture shit, Fishheads was speaking shibboleth to other geeks.
Well, and what's crazy about that, Cargill, I'm so glad you brought that up, because earlier today as I'm doing my research, I find that Bill Paxton is one of those guys that got his start not only appearing in music videos, but directing them as well. And when they said, when Fishheads was listed, they listed it on IMDb as a short film. And in my head, I immediately had this Proustian recall of like, and I started singing the song. I have not heard that song since I was very, very young, and heard it like, I don't know where I heard. I don't know, because by the time I would have heard it, it would have been 10 years after it came out.
Here's the thing, is there were a number of places you could have heard it. Because the thing is the song was made in 78, but in 1980, Bill Paxton petitioned Saturday Night Live to play the video. And Saturday Night Live played it in two consecutive weeks. They played it once. It was such a hit. They played it again the next week. Dr. Demento, it was a favorite on his radio show. And is notoriously the most requested song of all time on his radio show. Then it, of course, was on the ever popular counterculture 25th anniversary of Dr. Demento CD box set, which is where so many of me and my friends got to listen to that song a billion fucking times. But that video was one of those just notorious things that if you could catch it, like on an SNL rerun on cable or something like that, it was like, holy shit, it's fucking Fishheads. And many of us didn't connect until the 90s when it would play on MTV every once in a while. It would be like, holy shit, that's Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
Who? That's the Game Over Man guy. That's the guy from Tombstone. That's the guy, that's Chet from
Weird Science.
Yeah. Like, it was like, that's not that dude. That's that dude, I'm telling you, that looks just like Bill Paxton. Like, and of course, there was no IMDb. There was no IMDb. At the time to argue this. So it was just one of those things that, dude, I think. And then, of course, you would come to find out years later that not only is that really Bill Paxton, but he directed it as well. And
I just remember the falsetto line over and over again, ending with "Eat them up, yum."
Eat them up, yum.
And I haven't heard this fucking song.
I took
in
a
ages.
Fish head out to the movies. It didn't say anything.
I don't like. I don't know how I heard it, but it was like stuck in my brain and like one of the wrinkles of my brain. And as soon as I read the words fish heads, it came flooding back.
Of course, it was made by, it's a song sung by Barnes and Barnes, one of the members is Bill Mummy, who's Will Robinson of Danger Will Robinson fame. It was just such a weird cult thing of early LA and was just, it was, and so to not mention that in Best Things, like it's such a touchstone for a generation of counterculture starved people who didn't have an internet to connect these things with. So it was just one of those ever present shibboleth things like, oh shit, you know the words to Fishheads, you're fucking cool.
Right.
So there's that. So let's move on to number 10.
Number 10.
And I'm going to go with a controversial choice.
Ooh, right out of the gate with a controversy.
Club Dredd.
You know, he's good in Club Dredd.
He's really good in Club Dredd.
And this is a prime example of what I was just talking about.
Except that I actually love Club Dredd.
I can't fucking stand
them. I know you can't. This is why I said, I really, really, really like them. Like, I love Broken Lizard. Broken Lizard always makes me laugh. Even their one movie that didn't connect with me as much, The Slammin' Salmon, which I saw at a screening at South by Southwest, didn't connect. I then saw it the week it came out on DVD with this room full of friends, and we were howling with laughter, and it became a movie that I enjoyed more and more over time. I love all of their movies, and Club Dredd is such a great fun farce, and watching Bill Paxton play a Jimmy Buffett knockoff called Coconut Pete, who exists in the same universe as Jimmy Buffett. So it's not like they're just satirizing Jimmy Buffett. He's an actual Jimmy Buffett knockoff.
I think you're referring to my song Pina Coladaberg. Which was written 5 years before Margaritaville even existed.
7 months. Or no, 7 years. That's what it was. Yeah. It was 7 years before. But yes, that movie just makes me laugh.
My parents are parrot heads. I have grown up on the music of Jimmy Buffett, and he has a song called Son of a Sailor. And when Bill Paxton gets up out of that rant walking away and you just hear in the faintest of voices, son of a bitch, that is fucking funny.
And that's the thing. That's what I love about Broken Lizard is they seed so much really subtle stuff in there where it's like, not everybody's going to get this, but there's going to be two guys at home who are fucking howling. Yeah. It's also crazy to think about, like, one of the guys in that movie who plays one of the douchey bro-y guys, the we're not gay bro-y guys, is an Academy Award winner now who, you know, co-wrote The Descendants. Like, that's just,
yeah.
There's so much fucking talent in that movie. I find it really funny, but Bill Paxton as Coconut Pete is just, that's, if you need a reason to watch Club Dread again, it's watch it for Bill Paxton.
Absolutely. My number 10 choice is going to be slightly less well, I don't know, maybe it's not. It's a sequel that I actually really enjoy that has kind of gravitated back and forth within pop culture of being reviled and adored.
I know what this is. This did not make my list.
1990s Predator 2.
Which you love.
I do love this
You've
movie.
You've written an entire essay on the importance of Predator 2.
It is culturally in cinema the waiting room of the 1990s, where all of these character actors who made it huge in the 80s were waiting around to see if their careers were going to make it into the next decade. And that's why you have Bill Paxton in the same movie as Danny Glover. And Danny Glover is at the height of his too old for this shit to the point where he is referring to Bill Paxton in this movie, who would have been, you know, I think in his 30s, like late 30s, early 40s, as kid or that young cop or like the rookie. And it's like, yeah, but he's like a middle-aged man. Like, I'm not really sure you can call him kid. But this is, of course, one of the critical movies for Bill Paxton to achieve his tap, because he is in fact killed by a predator on a subway. And a moment that I actually like, because earlier on in the movie, you think he's going to be kind of scummy. He's kind of like talking very callously about a woman he arrested for killing her husband and kind of cracking wise about it. He's a little greasy, but in that moment, he really does have his heroic showdown with the predator. My only complaint being that it's, you know, kind of cut away before the violent eventuality. But a lot of his deaths in movies are kind of, if you watch them, he doesn't have like spectacular deaths in which he, like, they're extremely violent.
He's not Sean Bean.
Right, exactly. His deaths are meaningful and they are felt, but they're largely off screen, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But I enjoy the hell out of Predator 2, and he is part of a really great ensemble in this movie that I don't think gets enough credit. So he had to make the list for that.
And that movie's also notorious for including a small little in-joke for film geeks at the time, which ended up becoming canonical and gave us the Aliens versus Predator movies, which could have, at some point, I imagine, been good, but never turned out good.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because when you think about how long fans waited for Alien versus Predator and how long fans waited for Freddy versus Jason, both of which were teased in an installment of one of those franchises, this is kind of interesting.
Yeah. So let's go on to number 9.
Number 9.
My number 9 is a movie we talked about during the McConnaissance.
I knew this was coming.
U-571.
I spoke too soon.
Oh.
I forgot
he's in U-571.
No, I didn't forget he was in U-571. I forgot we covered it for McConnaissance.
Oh, no. Oh, no. No, when we're talking about favorite Bill Paxton, what you're thinking of is further up the list. Because, two of our movies from the McConnaissance.
I was going to say, like, if you're about to say the movie I think you're about to say, I am shocked at how low it is ranked.
Oh, no. No, we're not there yet. So U-571, this movie is fun. Is it historically accurate? No, it fucking ain't.
Well, I mean, the Americans won the war, so we beat the Nazis, so that's kind of accurate.
That's
right?
And there were guys, we did have guys on boats.
Yeah.
But no, this is one of those, but It's crazy. It's really entertaining. And one of the best parts about this movie is the minute we get onto the sub, the movie's set in real time. Like, it's not like, it's not necessarily one of those like counting the seconds down exactly. Mm-hmm. But from the time we get on the boat, we are in the moment on the boat.
We're on a boat.
And we are being shot at, and we are fighting, and we're trying to hold this thing together with duct tape and bailing wire. And dear God, is it a fly by the seat of your pants movie? And Bill Paxton plays one of the older guys in this, and is kind of passing the torch, as it were. But he's great in this movie, and this movie is just so much fun that it had to be on my list.
And it has arguably more action and more submarines than The Imitation Game, which was also about the German Enigma machine. So,
which is also factually inaccurate.
If you watch the Imitation,
like we could, but the Americans and the Brits both made movies about the Enigma machine, and both of them were factually inaccurate because apparently, as exciting a story as that is in history, we can't seem to figure out a way to make an exciting movie about it and get it right.
But if you watch The Imitation Game and you thought to yourself, "This needs more submarines
and Americans,"
watch U-571. All right.
Your number nine.
My number nine is a little film called Next of Kin.
Ah, this one did not make my list, but I really kicked it around. This is, by the way, Junkies, a future episode.
No doubt about it.
We've been talking about
all of the drinks.
You know what? We've been talking about it for so long. Let's just fucking do Next of Kin.
We're going to stop this episode, and now we're just talking about Next of Kin.
No. I mean, let's do it in the next few weeks.
We've
mentioned Next of Kin like four or five times over the last 6 months. It's about fucking time we just do Next. It's got so many of our junk food favorites in it. I mean, it's, you know,
it has Liam Neeson with a rat tail doing a terrible Southern accent. And not Southern Wales, not Southern Dublin, the South, the American South.
Patrick Swayze, Liam Neeson, and our boy, Bill Paxton.
Just to name
all
a few.
In the same movie. How have we not talked about this movie yet?
It's a very good question. And Patrick Swayze has the line in this movie that should have not only been the tagline to this movie, but every movie that was made since, like, after that point, which is, "You ain't seen bad yet, but it's coming." God, I love that line.
Yeah.
I love that line so much. If you're not familiar with this film, this is a 1989 action film directed by John Irvin. He is a Junk Food alum. And it's a movie where Patrick Swayze plays a Chicago cop who's originally from the Deep South. He lived in a holler with all of his hillbilly, the Appalachian, you know, mountains with all of his hillbilly relatives. He moved to the big city. He's kind of been ostracized from the family a little bit because of it. And then his little brother comes to kind of follow in his footsteps and live in the big city, played by Bill Paxton, gets embroiled with some criminal activities, and unfortunately winds up dead he's driving a truck and ends up getting killed during a mob hijacking. Now, Patrick Swayze, being the level-headed member of his family, decides that he's going to handle the investigation, he's going to get to the bottom of it, and the problem is that while he's investigating his brother's death on one end, he's also trying to keep his vengeance-crazed family from the holler, from coming up to the big city and getting their own brand of vengeance, led, of course, by a character named Briar Gates, played by Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson,
which, by the way, does kind of sound like a Deep South name, but if you're familiar with Liam Neeson, you know that he's about as Southern as Bangers and Mash. And Bill Paxton is, unfortunately, Gerald Gates, the younger brother that gets murdered. Now, this movie, it was really tough to revisit because not only is Paxton's character, his death, the catalyst of the revenge plot, there's a very tearful funeral scene in this movie where all the members of his family are, you know, they're singing gospel music and they're standing around the coffin, and it's just a very somber affair. And when the last shot of that funeral is they pan around and show a picture of Bill Paxton, that was tough to revisit right now. I'll be honest with you. I cried a little bit. Like, it was tough, but the movie itself is a lot of fun. It's one of those like Southern fried revenge movies that I actually really love. And it's just, it's a blast. And it's got a great cast all the way across. Highly recommend it. It's my number nine.
Number eight. From my heart and from my hands, why don't people understand my intentions? We're science. Weird Science.
Weird Science.
Weird Science is, I love Weird Science.
Dum, 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 dum.
It's so weird that I don't regard Weird Science as well as many of John Hughes' other movies, because as good as it is, his other movies are so great, that this feels like the cast off. Like the, yeah, this one's also good. It's God, you're the sports ball fan. Who's that, the football where there's three brothers who are all quarterbacks?
I'm sorry. The sports ball fan.
You're the sports ball
fan.
You're
the sports ball fan. The three brothers are all, the Mannings.
Yeah, the Mannings.
Yeah.
This is, the Weird Science is like the lesser Manning. like that's what Weird Science is. Like that's not to it's like, it's still a great fucking movie, but it's not Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's not 16 Candles. It's not Pretty in Pink. It's not Breakfast Club. Like it's like, it might creep into your top five of John Hughes' best movies. Which is to say, it's still fucking great, and I love this movie, and it still makes my list. He, of course, plays Chet, the older brother, where this is, he's still young in his career, he's still playing mostly walk-on roles, and he's playing a fucking bully. But man, does he nail all the bully bits, and you hate him. Yeah. And when Kelly LeBrock unleashes revenge on him, holy shit, do you have fun. It's why we all remember Chet. Like, yeah. Who remembers the douchebag older bro brother from, you know, most of these 80s movies, but fucking Paxton nails it, and you never forget Chet.
I have a running theory that the kid who played Buzz in Home Alone was definitely a fan of Weird Science, because he was trying so hard to pull that off and not doing it. But props to you for calling Weird Science the Cooper Manning of John Hughes movies. The John Hughes movie that apparently got injured in college and never really realized its full potential. Anywho,
all right, your number.
My number eight is a movie that Bill Paxton is not, he's not in the movie for very long, but he definitely makes an impression. A film we talked about a few weeks ago on Junk Food Cinema, Streets of Fire, where he plays the bartender. He's just, it's another one of those situations where he's not in the movie for very long, but he definitely makes his presence felt and is a very sage character, a guy you want to see more of.
I get the impression that at this point in time, he was one of those guys that everyone in town loved and that everybody wanted to work with. And he was just a great dude. And everyone's like, he was probably one of those guys like in the early 80s, everyone's just like, why hasn't Bill hit yet? Like, mm-hmm. Bill is so good. Bill is great. Why hasn't Bill hit? And then enough people put him in shit that everyone's like, oh, it's that dude from that thing. And, you know, once he had James Cameron on his side, putting him in fucking everything.
Yeah.
And I mean fucking everything. Cameron rarely made movies without Bill Paxton. So,
he's not in the movie long, but he definitely shows us the color of his money in the few moments that he is in it. And he gets knocked the fuck out in an early scene by Amy Madigan, and it's so perfect.
Yeah, no, it's a great moment. And yeah, if you have not listened to that episode yet, go back. We had Greg McClenahan from the Alamo Draft House stop by on that episode, and I enjoyed that episode quite a bit.
It's, and I'm only doing this because I have seen him several times lately. Unfortunately, I have to correct people on Twitter. It's McLennan is how you pronounce his last name.
McLennan, yeah. No, that's me fucking up.
No. And I'm not saying that to throw you under the bus, but I literally have seen him have Twitter conversations with at least three people that he has known for a long time who have either misspelled his name or mispronounced it. I just feel terrible for that guy. I feel like none of us can get his name right.
Well, that's because how often do you really call him by his last name?
That's true. He's Alamo Gray.
On a podcast, and right now I'm kind of focused on Paxton. So.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's very true. So yes, I would definitely say Streets of Fire is my number eight, which brings us to Number seven,
a movie I don't know that you've seen. It's a movie that I have had on my short list for quite some time.
Dude, I've seen Aliens. Come on.
No. You didn't put it on your top five of Summer of 86, though.
Yeah, that was a tough list. That was a tough list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but no, this is one has been on my short list for a long time. I very much want to do an episode on it. It was never put out on DVD. It's not easy to find. It's a little movie called Pass the Ammo.
Welcome to the Tower of Bethlehem, a house of divine inspiration, golf, and heavenly ratings. The home of Reverend Ray and his devoted wife, Darla. They take from the poor.
I pledge $100.
$1,000.
I ain't got it.
And give to themselves. But while they were climbing the stairway to heaven,
they got your money.
It just plain wrong. It's stealing.
They stepped on the wrong folks.
We're gonna get your money back.
Just take it back. It belongs to my girlfriend here.
Yeah.
I'm insane, I'm crazy, I just got out of jail. And I guess y'all know what these are, don't you?
That's our ministry's money.
Well, folks, you can see what I'm up against here.
They don't want to be heroes. They just want their money back.
Well, that's entertainment.
Pass the ammo.
Don't touch that dial.
Pass the ammo is an amazing oddity of the 1980s.
Is it a sequel to Praise the Lord?
No.
Okay.
But it is kind of fucking amazing. It is a movie in which Tim Curry plays a philandering, cheating, lying sack of shit televangelist who runs the biggest fucking televangelist show on television. He is just fire and brimstone all the time. He's pure showmanship. It's pure 80s television. And he ends up pilfering Bill Paxton's grandmother out of her last money, and or not his grandmother, his girlfriend's grandmother. And so he gets together with a couple of his redneck friends and they decide to take over the TV station to try to get the money back. And so they go and hold up a live televangelism show, and the televangelist decides to keep it on the air to help continue to raise money and ratings. And so what you have is a hostage situation at a televangelism show with Tim fucking Curry as the televangelist. It's fucking hilarious. It has sharp as fuck writing. And it's where you get to see fun Bill Paxton. This is one of those roles where he just looks like he's having the time of his fucking life.
Yeah.
And if you were a Tim Curry fan, holy God, watching him as this preacher, go in when you get a chance and you're done with this podcast, check out the trailer for this. The trailer's kooky as hell. It's definitely going to whet your appetite for it. It is a movie well worth seeking out simply because it is odd, it is weird, and it is funny as fuck.
You had me at Tim Curry, but I will definitely be checking this one out. My number seven, moving through the collaborations with Jimmy Cameron, I have to go with True Lies. The character...
This is my number five movie.
Oh, nice. The character that
we have finally gotten to the point where now we are stepping on each other's. Yeah, my number five is True Lies.
Crossing swords. Pew, 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 pew. The character he plays in True Lies is so fucking scummy. And this is the first movie, I think, on my list at least, where we get to see the unhinged Bill Paxton. Bill Paxton was nicknamed in college Wild Bill because he loved pranks and he was... had just larger than life sense of humor. And I feel like you really see that in a lot of his movies. And I think that version of Bill Paxton is what most people remember him for. And because of a movie that's going to be high up on both of our lists. And that is the level of energy that he brought to a lot of his performances and sort of the just over the top, like good old boy who's not so good kind of quality that he brought to a lot of those roles. And this movie in True Lies, where he's playing the used car salesman who's literally trying to sell Jamie Lee Curtis that he's on the idea that he's a spy just so he can sleep with her, and then has that great moment where he's on a test drive with Schwarzenegger and doesn't know that he's bragging about this to the woman's husband.
So who are you working on right now?
Oh, I always got a couple on the hook, you know. There's this one right now. I got her pinned like a dog. It's great.
What does she do?
Some sort of legal secretary or something. You know, uptight and conservative. Oh, but she could be so hot if she wanted to be.
Hey, but you, she gets to be real hot, huh?
Red hot.
Yeah.
Her thigh steam. It's like a dying plant, just needs a little water. Married to some boring jerk.
Married to some boring jerk.
Yeah, you know, he doesn't appreciate her.
It's just so quintessential Bill Paxton for me. Like, whether he's the guy you're supposed to love in the movie or the guy you're supposed to hate in the movie, he's going to bring the same amount of energy and the same amount of craft and care. And I love watching him in this role.
I have a tiny penis. It's pathetic.
He has a line in this movie where he says that Jamie Lee Curtis looks like she could suck start a leaf blower.
Mm-hmm.
That has stuck with me for so long. And I laugh at every other thing that he drops in this, every other line that of dialogue that he drops.
He's hilarious. And this
so
movie,
funny.
This movie is James Cameron's funniest film. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
It is his full tilt comedy. It's a movie so good. Tom Arnold has made a career running around saying they're eventually going to make a second one.
Oh, Tom Arnold. Even if they did not with you.
It is a crazy movie. Like at this point, if they made True Lies 2, Arnold would have to come back as the Charlton Heston role. He would have to come back as Omega.
And that's actually what I was going to say, is if they made a sequel, it is far more likely that they would digitally resurrect Charlton Heston before they would call Tom Arnold again. But
this movie is just pure fun. That's why it's so high up on my list. It's one of my favorites. I saw it like 3 or 4 times in a theater when it came out. It is just so satisfying. It is one of the best deconstructions of James Bond.
Yeah.
Like there have been dozens upon dozens of James Bond deconstructions. This is the most interesting outside of the original Austin Powers, in which they really play with this idea of what the fuck do these guys do when they go home? Like,
yeah.
Who is this guy? And this guy who really, as great a super spy as he is, he really just enjoys being a dad.
Yeah.
And really, you know, wants to have a home and wants a nice, boring wife that loves him.
And the complication of trying to manage this kind of career and a domestic home life is exactly why James Bond only got married in one of the movies and why it didn't last long. Junkie Yawns, if you know the name of that movie, hit me up on Twitter just for funsies. But yeah, I love True Lies.
Yeah. So, all right. My number 6.
Number six.
One that I know is going to be much higher up on your list.
Ooh, interesting.
This is a redemption of mine recently. It was a movie I did not like for a long time. It is one that I have come to love, but because I've only recently come to love it, it has not moved up the list. We will see 10 years from now. If I were to make the same list, it might be further up. But it is, of course, Tombstone.
Tombstone is my number 4.
Yeah, it is a great movie, and he is fantastic in it. And the only downside is he's kind of overshadowed by the fact that he's paired up as the brother to two other fucking cinema legends whose faces will also one day be on Mount Junk Food.
Oh, for
fucking
sure.
Kurt Russell and goddamn
Sam Elliott.
You
forget my name for a second there.
don't because we'll pull the nitro back out.
I'll get it tattooed on my mustache.
Give me a little mustache. Yeah, the three of them together are so great, and they're just they look like they're having such a great time together in that town, and Paxton just kind of gets overshadowed.
And it's one of the many films in which Bill Paxton's character does not make it to the end of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, Bill Paxton never got the reputation that Sean Bean got.
But he was kind of this.
He was kind of that guy. He died.
He was in the same boat that the boat then exploded and killed him.
Yep.
Yeah. My number 6 is...
By the way, the reason why we're not spending too much time on that one, we literally just did the episode. Yeah. That and Streets of Fire, go back and check out those episodes.
For sure. Number 6 is actually a very recent movie. Maybe the most recent movie on the list, I would venture. And that is 2014's Nightcrawler.
Oh.
Nightcrawler is a phenomenal film. If you have not seen it, highly recommend you check it out.
This got bumped off my list, and I felt really bad putting Club Dread on this list and not Nightcrawler.
Yeah, you should.
Nightcrawler is an infinitely better film, but we had talked about our favorite Paxton films.
And that is a very important
distinction. And Nightcrawler is a movie that I watched once and like, that's a movie so good I'm not watching it again. Like that is like maybe 10, 15 years from now, I'll go back and revisit it. But that movie goes to ooky, dark places. That is not a movie that you're like, you know what? I feel like having a couple beers, a shot of Jack and watching Nightcrawler. Like that is not a thing you do.
All of these other movies are lagers. This one's a porter.
Yeah.
It's really good, but it's not the kind of thing you want to keep going back to because it is very heavy.
It's also the worst X-Men adaptation of all time.
It is. It is, actually, although somehow still better than the one in Apocalypse. This is a movie where Jake Gyllenhaal plays Lewis Bloom, who decides, kind of accidentally stumbles upon the fact that you can make a career out of videotaping tragedy, horrible things happening in L.A., and selling that footage to news stations. If you happen to be on the first on the scene of an accident and you get the really gory footage, you can make a lot of money selling that. So it is a very scummy profession that is attractive to a sociopathic, sinister type of person, which Lewis proves to be more and more throughout the course of the movie. He is not, however, the inventor of this profession. And what at one point in the movie, he runs afoul of a character named Joe, who has been doing this for ages and basically gives him the get off my lawn speech. And Joe is played by Bill Paxton. And this just goes back to what I was saying before. Bill Paxton was equally watchable, equally enthralling, whether you were supposed to love him or hate him. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, it is probably the most complicated of your relationship with him as an audience member of all the movies we're going to talk about, because on the one hand, you're not supposed to like him because he and Lewis have the exact same profession, but throughout the course of the movie,
you're not supposed to like Lewis
either.
You
hate Lewis so much that you start to feel for Joe, even though that is testament to the performances of both of these actors.
The sexual harassment scene in this is one of the most uncomfortable. Intentionally uncomfortable. Like, it is the only scene I can think of that is as uncomfortable in terms of sexual harassment is unintentional. And that's from Meatballs, where Meatballs is a movie I cannot revisit because last time I revisited it, it ooked me out to this level because it's like, this is supposed to be playful and this is textbook sexual harassment. Like, there are whole videos about this and about how wrong this is and how not to do this at work. And this is Bill Murray doing this. This is not right. But when Jake Gyllenhaal does it here, it gets under your fucking skin and you kind of want to set this guy on fire and kick him down the stairs.
There is a moment of passing the torch in this movie, not intentionally. No. Not passing the torch. Having the torch stolen from your, like, cold, dead hand in this movie between Lewis and Joe that just is one of the ookier moments of the movie. And, again, just a testament to what a great performer that Bill Paxton is you, when you initially meet him, you don't like him at all. And by the time his story concludes, you're like, Jesus Christ, I'm so on that guy's side.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Nightcrawler is my number six.
All right. My number five is
number five.
Lies. So okay. You're number five.
This is going to be an interesting choice, not just because I know you don't care for this movie, but because of my recent revisit of this movie and what it taught me. My number five is Twister.
Okay.
Twister is a movie that I have grown up my entire life absolutely loving. It was one of the first DVDs my dad bought to test his surround sound. So every time I think of this movie, I think of it loud. I think of the experience of seeing it. I think of the effects. I think of the spectacle. I also just remember loving Bill Paxton's character in the film, this weatherman who, Billy the Extreme, as everyone calls him, who has kind of gotten away from the storm chaser life and is being pulled back into it by his, well, for one thing, his affinity for chasing tornadoes, and the other, his undying love for Helen Hunt's character, Joe. What I recently discovered on a revisit is that the effects in this movie hold up very well. The character work in this movie holds up even better. The story is fucking stupid. This is one of the dumbest movies.
This movie
I've seen it.
When
a
you
while.
Texted me and like I was kind of thinking we'd do Twister this week, and I was like, I was kind of thinking, no, this movie is Twister was everything that film geeks were angry about Hollywood with in the 90s, when everybody kind of departed and said, we want indie films now. Give us Pulp Fiction. Give us Reservoir Dogs. Give us Hard Eight. Give us Boogie Nights. Give us, you know.
See, and I get that. Well, I get that. But
this movie was an example of how stupid everything had become. The two movies that most film geeks would cite, and I feel a bit more brutal than was deserved at the time was this and Con Air. Like these
which
were
are two movies I love.
Yes. Neither of which
are good.
Are good.
They're not good movies. They're super dumb movies.
The thing, you know what broke my heart? Fatboy Roberts, who does he does a lot of audio work. He's a radio guy and does a bunch of remixes, but he does audio work for a podcast we mention constantly, 80s All Over.
Oh yeah.
He posted a picture from Twister of Bill Paxton and Philip Seymour Hoffman that just guts your soul that we lost those two talents way too fucking early.
And it's strange because I watched this with my fiance and she brought that up as soon as the movie started. She said, "Oh, we lost Philip Seymour Hoffman too." And it just like that really sunk in because as I love the character of Billy in this movie, I also adore the character of Dusty, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, to the extent that I literally was working on a screenplay where I wrote a character who was 1,000% inspired by Dusty from Twister. But yeah, the thing about this movie and Con Air, and now I know that they're on the same level, is that they are... if these movies were people, they would be jocks who have been injecting human growth hormone between their toes for like 20 years. They're just that dumb. The whole purpose of the movie, the whole purpose of the experiment that they're risking their lives to get off the ground, literally, is to increase the alert time so that people in rural areas are more alerted to tornadoes. Hey, that's great. That's really noble and all. But at least three times in the movie, the TV tells us and the characters in the movie that a tornado was coming, and they don't bother to fucking tell anybody. I'm like, it's on the TV right now. If you're worried about your aunt, call her and tell her there's a fuck. Don't get in the car and drive and try to beat the tornado 20 miles from here. Call her and tell her, or better yet, tell her to turn on the TV. We know she has because it almost falls on her in the next scene that there's a fucking, there's nothing wrong with the alert system. You people are just ignoring it. I could not stop noticing it.
Yeah.
It was driving me fucking insane. I still love the movie, and I'm surprised at how well the effects still hold up, and I love the characters. Like, this movie...
You love the flying cow. Let's face it. You're a fan of the flying cow.
I'm more a fan of driving through the entire house that rolls across the street. But the cast of this movie, if it did not have this cast, we would not even be mentioning this movie ever.
No. And, you know, what's interesting is apparently there's a Twister ride at one of the studios.
Yeah.
And apparently they got Bill Paxton to do the voiceover for it.
Oh, my God, I have to go.
And he could not, apparently everyone who's gone says he could not give less of a fuck. Like, it's just
got to go.
Listening to bored Bill Paxton fucking just kind of slowly take you through Twister, the ride.
But what I love about his character in this movie is you get both sides of Bill Paxton. You get the wild man, literally Billy the Extreme, but then at the beginning of the movie, he's so buttoned up and he's so middle of the road as the quote, he's the weatherman, and he's kind of not satisfied with the path his life has led him to, where he's now like the weatherman to him is the 3-piece suit wearing sellout. And you get to see him kind of play both of those roles, and it's so fucking good. But yeah, so Twister is my number five.
Number four.
Number four.
The second most recent movie on this list.
Oh, okay.
And a future, this is a very recent film, but it is a movie that 20 years from now, I guarantee you are going to pass along to someone who never got a chance to see it. It's the type of movie that dads are going to sit down with their teenage sons and go, "What do you mean you haven't seen Edge of Tomorrow?" Ooh. And they're going to go, "You mean Live, Die, Repeat?" No, I mean Edge of Tomorrow, motherfucker.
I mean All You Need Is Kill, motherfucker.
All You Need Is Kill, motherfucker. What a great...
How did they change this title twice?
Because All You Need Is Kill didn't make any sense. The Live, Die, Repeat, I don't actually think was what they changed the title to.
No. It was the DVD release.
DVD, it said that on the cover, and everyone assumed that was...
Well, because it didn't say the actual fucking title. All it said was Live, Die, Repeat. It took a tagline and blew it up to the point that it was the only thing on the cover.
And as a result...
Unprecedented.
As a result... It is now referred to as Live, Die, Repeat, Edge of Tomorrow online. This is Edge of Tomorrow. And this is one of the best, most interesting, crazy fucking science fiction movies of the last decade. Like, it is just fantastic. It is well executed. Everybody does their job perfectly. It's a great idea. It is something that people have attempted for 25 years and has only just now gotten right. It is Groundhog Day in a science fiction film. People have tried to make Groundhog Day work. They have tried to make the, you know, the setup work over and over again. The closest to ever come to doing that kind of does it, kind of doesn't. And that's Run Lola Run. You know, that's debatable as to whether, you know, how much of Groundhog Day that is.
There's a like tween drama coming out this year that I saw the trailer for at a recent screening, and I was like, that's Groundhog Day.
Yeah, it's an idea that's been played, that X-Files did an episode about it. Like, there have been tons of scripts. You just call it Groundhog Day. This is Groundhog Day, but it gets it right. The aliens have this weird effect on people, and this guy keeps, he's caught in a temporal loop, and as a result, he trying to figure out how to defeat the aliens and how to save this girl at the same time. And of course, Bill Paxton plays the drill sergeant, you know, the head of this unit that is very, very ill-fated. Yeah. And he's got a mouthful of Southern accent that a lot of people like to make fun of because it's a bit over the top. It's not really very on the nose. But Bill Paxton is, again, having the time of his fucking life in this role. And every time he's on camera, it brings a smile to your face and reminds you of the fact that he's the character from Aliens all grown up.
So, Cargill, would you say you're a big fan of Groundhog Day and the idea of a temporal loop? Would you say that's something that you really enjoy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's interesting. It is. Let me preface, not preface because I've already said it. Let me go back and preface what I'm going to say again by mentioning that it is now March, so it has been 4 months since it came out, but update, I finally saw Doctor Strange.
So, had you not seen it yet?
I had not seen it yet. I hadn't been mentioning that on the show because I was very ashamed.
How had you not seen fucking Doctor Strange, motherfucker?
I have a pregnant fiance. I don't go to the movies anymore.
Brian, I've come to bargain.
I watched a certain point in that film and I thought, somebody really liked Groundhog Day a whole lot. Anyway, moving on to not spoil anything, but you started, when you referred to Groundhog Day as a temporal loop, I was like, okay. Fair enough.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, well, my number four was Tombstone, and we all know how we feel about that movie. So we can move on to number three.
The movie you thought I was bringing up earlier, and we did an episode on, and we hold to be a truly special fucking film, Frailty.
There are demons among us. The devil has released them for the final battle. It's being fought right now. Nobody knows it except us and others like us.
I'm scared, Dad.
There's nothing to be afraid of, Tiger. We've been chosen by God. He will protect us. He's given us special jobs to do. We don't fear these demons. We destroy them. We pick them up one by one and we pitch them out of this world.
My number one.
Directed by Bill Paxton, one of the only two features he directed.
His fucking masterpiece.
His masterpiece. And a horror thriller masterpiece. It is something someone else pointed out that I'm so jealous they pointed out. Holy fuck, I really wish I had been the person to come up with this. It is the, of all the movies out there about serial killers, it's the only one to definitively come down on the pro side. And you're kind of fucking with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this movie is so elegantly put together. It is so wonderful. There's only one film I've ever seen that I can compare to it, and it's a movie that is coming out here shortly. It played a Fantastic Fest a year and a half ago. Devil's Candy.
Ah, yes.
Devil's Candy is, if you love Frailty, see Devil's Candy when it's out. See it in a theater. Support this film. Once you watch Devil's Candy, you will go, holy shit, this is why Cargill said this is similar to Frailty, and you'll want to watch these as a double feature because it's a perfect fucking double feature. Oh, my God. But dear God, Frailty, another one of those episodes I will implore you, if you have not listened to our Frailty episode, go back, go and watch Frailty. If there's any movie to watch in honor of Bill Paxton, it's fucking Frailty. And then check out our Junk Food Cinema episode on it, because it is such a wonderful film. Matthew McConaughey is so great in it. Bill Paxton directing himself is menacing as fuck. He has never been as scary as he is in this fucking movie.
I agree 100%.
It's almost as if he was like, no one has ever given me the chance to play the stepfather or to...
Oh, fuck you, Dylan Baker. That Stepfather remake should have been. It wasn't Dylan Baker. It was one of the guys from Nip Tuck. Point is, should have been fucking Bill Paxton.
Oh my God, Bill Paxton in the Stepfather remake would have been great.
Yes, please.
He is just so terrifying in this movie and is so good and so connects to those points. Like, it is just, it's a masterpiece. Like, it is a masterpiece, and it's a movie I feel like down the road is going to be, it's his Night of the Hunter.
Ooh.
Like, that's what this movie is. And 20, 30 years from now, we're still going to be talking about Frailty.
Man.
And talking about how this great character actor, this genre actor, directed a film, and that film was such a perfect horror classic.
Comparing Frailty to Night of the Hunter, I'm glad we're on the radio so that no one can see the erection I have, but it is there and it is formidable. I absolutely love Frailty. It is one of those. I think it's a perfect movie. I really do, and I will revisit that any damn day of the week. So, yes, that's why it's actually my number one. Not only that, but because Bill Paxton did a masterful job directing it. So, what number was that for
that's
you?
That's three. So you're number three.
My number three. The movie that I think is probably number one on most people's list, number one in their hearts at the very least.
And probably my number two.
Private Hudson himself.
Oh, Aliens.
Aliens.
My number two film.
Holy
not my number one, my
shit.
Number two.
Oh my God. So Frailty wasn't your number one. Aliens wasn't your number one. Interesting. Aliens. Oh, no, I know what your number one is.
All of a sudden, oh, fuck, Cargill. I know. You won't shut up about this movie.
I know, because it's my number two. So we're going to meet... We're going to meet and end this right at the same place.
Yeah, let's do this.
But Aliens, holy fucking shit. One of the most perfect Men on a Mission movies ever made.
Arguably.
One of the best sci-fi movies ever made.
And in everyone's top three of best sequels ever made.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
Like, it would, someone might throw a James Bond in there. Everyone that's our age is going to say Empire belongs on that list. Aliens. Fucking, Godfather 2 belongs on that list. This is up there with that. This is literally one of the best sequels ever made, and it is one of those greatest movies ever made.
Yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors. We could go on for a while about the sequels.
Which, just had its 30th anniversary this week.
Fast Five. It is one of the best sequels ever made. It is, the density of the talent in this movie.
I'm sorry, you just said Fast Five, and I'm just gonna, the safe is on the move again.
safe is on the move again. Say what you want. That's one of the best sequels ever made. I will defend that point until
you
my
will,
dying
You will
breath.
Break a bottle and cut a bitch.
I will.
All right, Aliens. Aliens.
Anyway.
We have to sell you on Aliens.
Yeah,
at
we
this
don't.
Point.
We did
like,
it.
It's fucking. If you are listening to this podcast and you haven't seen Aliens in the last 5 years, fucking sit down and watch goddamn Aliens and remember, oh God, this is a perfect fucking movie. And watch the director's cut, because you know what? It's really one of those director's cuts that really is far superior to the theatricals.
Which I would not say the same for the Alien director.
No, Alien is not.
Which is surprising, but. Here again, a great example of the over-the-top Bill Paxton.
Hey, Ripley, don't worry. Me and my squad of ultimate badasses will protect you.
The really swinging for the fences, leaving it all on the field, other sports metaphors, Bill Paxton.
Motherfucker! Come on! Come on! Get me! Come on! Get me! Come on! Come on! Come on, you bastard! Come on, you two! Oh, you want some of this? Fuck you!
And a character you don't like at the beginning, but his death is crushing. Like, you hate it when he dies, despite the fact that he hasn't done anything in the movie to make you really love him.
Except
especially
funny.
In the beginning, but he is very funny. And, of course, has the great line, Yes, game over, man. So yes, Aliens is my number three. Bringing us to number two, which I think is also going to round out our lists.
Yeah, my number two, or your number two,
my number one.
Near Dark.
Near fucking Dark.
Near Dark. Pray for daylight.
And you know what? This was a tough one with these bottom threes. They're all three of these, inarguably, are classics.
I love that you're saying fuck you to yourself because you're the only person that said that.
Everyone. All three of these are classic movies.
Yeah.
That time is going to, is not going to neglect. Near Dark is just, it is my favorite vampire film of all time.
Agreed.
I am endlessly inspired by Catherine Bigelow's direction on this.
Mm-hmm.
And the choice to make a vampire movie in which no one ever utters the word vampire. No one ever explains what vampires are. This movie reminds me a lot of Empire Strikes Back in how delightfully lean the movie is. It's one of those things. I didn't realize it until rewatching Empire at a recent theatrical screening we had here in town. Just how nobody says anyone's names in the first 20 minutes of the movie. You have to be on board and be caught up and know what this is in order to know what's going on. And so that movie just fucking moves because they don't waste any fucking time with exposition.
Right.
Well, that's fucking Near Dark. Near Dark is like, you know what a fucking vampire is. You know what a vampire movie is. What you don't know is what would happen if we had a feral pack of fucking vampires moving from town to town like a pack of wild fucking dogs. And god damn it, Bill Paxton alongside Lance Henriksen rejoined from Aliens.
Along with Jeanette Goldstein from Aliens.
Yes.
50% of this vampire pack is from the movie Aliens.
And they are phenomenal. That's the thing, is Aliens is such a great movie in which the reason why this beats Aliens on my list is Aliens is such a great monster movie with all of these great actors doing great roles. Near Dark is a great monster movie with all of these great actors playing the monsters. And it is just, it is mean, it is dark, it is fun. It is bloody. It is everything we love about junk food cinema with a lean, mean, fucking 450 horsepower engine that just fucking floors it and does not stop.
Finger licking good.
I have to say one more thing about Twister. So what really...
No, motherfucker. You're talking Near Dark. We are talking Near Dark. We can wrap up afterwards.
I just got to say one thing.
How
does a movie written by Michael Crichton...
Have you seen many Michael Crichton movies?
No, I have, but like the level of stupidity in this film surpasses anything I've seen in any Michael Crichton written movie.
Sphere?
I will watch Sphere and argue it's dumb. Yes, it's nowhere near as dumb as fucking Twister. So anyway, that is our
Near
top.
Dark. Near Dark. You didn't talk Near Dark.
I'm sorry. Near Dark, I mean, you kind of said it all, and of course, we gushed about it.
Yes.
On our episode, and it is...
Except we didn't actually do it. We've never done a full episode on Near Dark.
We did an 80s vampire episode, and we probably need to do a full Near Dark episode. I will say this about Near Dark. The Bill Paxton thing was especially palpable for me because Bill Paxton is one of those things that my fiance and I bonded over early on, was that how much we both loved Bill Paxton, how much we both loved James Cameron movies, and she's a big James Horner fan. And I got to show her Near Dark. It's like one of the first movies I got to be like, oh we're going to sit down and watch a movie you haven't seen. I'm going to show you Near Dark. And of course she loved it. And so when we watched Twister recently, it was like the two of us together, it just felt like a very meaningful moment. And I hate that he's gone. Like, it really bothers me that we're not going to see Bill Paxton. That's what bothers me the most. I know I didn't know him personally. I'd never met him. The fact that I am not going to get to go into any movie theater, see a new movie with Bill Paxton in it, is such a crushing reality.
Like, he has been trying to make another film for like 10 years that we're never going to see. that we've been waiting patiently for. He's owed. He was one of those great directors who was going to owe us two or three more movies.
Yeah.
Like, we were going to get two or three more movies. One of them was going to be mediocre. One was going to be good. And then he was going to have one more great movie in him. Like, you could just, he was that kind of an actor where it's like, he would do that kind of a thing. He'd have his Larry Crown and then we would totally forget and forgive him for that because he made that thing you do kind of thing. Because Frailty is fucking masterpiece.
Yes.
Greatest game ever played is really good. But he owed us two or three more good movies. And I really, that's what makes me sad. Like I'm sad that I'm not going to see more Bill Paxton, but the truth is when you go through that IMDb profile, like how many of these movies that we mentioned tonight are among your favorite movies? Like these are favorite movie kind of things. And then you get into, you know, the top of our list, which are the oddballs. And then there's the ones we didn't even mention because they're not our favorite oddballs that some of you guys are like shaking your fist going, what the fuck, Cargill and Brian? Like how
tweeted
the fuck?
Us.
Yeah. Tell us why we're wrong. Tell us your favorite Bill Paxton role that we didn't mention. It's tough because he's done so much. Like one of my favorite things he's done that would have made the list, but we did movies, was the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. When he shows up and turns out to be a turncoat, spoiler warning, and he is, holy fuck, is he fun. And his final moment in the end of that season is so fucking good and is one of those best moments of an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode, period. He's just fantastic because the first season came out before, the first half of it came out before Captain America Winter Soldier. And then at episode 17 is the week before Winter Soldier comes out, and it sets up what happens at the beginning of Winter Soldier. And then 18 is the week after Winter Soldier came out, and all of a sudden we're in the midst, we're watching S.H.I.E.L.D. characters while S.H.I.E.L.D. is breaking up, and oh yeah, Bill Paxton was fucking Hydra, and holy God, Bill Paxton as the villain in the last half of that episode is so much fun and so good and so dark, and he brought everything that Bill Paxton brought. I am very sad that we're not going to see that anymore, but I am even more heartbroken that I'm never going to get to see another Bill Paxton directed movie because he was a genius.
Hydra.
So let's raise a glass to Bill Paxton, the first official face on Mount Junk Food.
Yeah.
You have earned your place there, my friend.
On Mount Junk Food. I just want to, in terms of being owed more Bill Paxton, I just want to run down a real quick list of roles he almost got. The first, I tried to keep these in chronological order, but The Garage Attendant, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh.
The Rocketeer.
Yeah.
Dark Man.
Yeah.
Steve Guttenberg's role in Cocoon.
Oh, my God.
Lance in Pulp Fiction. Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park. The lead in Roland Emmerich's Godzilla. The lead in Jumanji. Stifler's dad. And Robert Langdon in The Da Vinci Code.
You know, the only one I think we're really missing out there is Stifler's dad would have been kind of amazing.
And funny enough, the guy who replaced him as Stifler's dad was Chris Penn, and that scene got cut.
Yeah.
So there is no Stifler's dad. So people are probably like, what the fuck are you talking about? But I would have loved to see there. And what's great about this, and when I was researching this, every single time he didn't take a role, it was for something better. It's not one of those stories like you hear in other careers. It's like, oh my God, why didn't he do that? It's not Sean Connery turning down Lord of the Rings.
I just don't get it.
I don't understand this at all. I mean,
he's the Hobbit?
He's a fucking ring. Why don't you just fly the ring with the big birds? You've got giant birds. Just fly them to Mordor and put the fucking ring in there. It doesn't make any sense. But every time he turned down a role, it was for, oh, I'm going to go do this Showtime series called Big Love, or I'm going to go be in Aliens.
We got to this whole episode and didn't even mention Big Love.
I haven't seen Big Love. That's something I'm going to now correct and go back and watch.
Yeah, you've got like 60 episodes of Bill Paxton ahead of you.
I know, and I'm so happy. I know people are like, why haven't you seen Big Love? And I'm like, yeah, but now it's like a fucking time capsule or one of those videos you find of your father after he dies, like recording you a message like, here's what I wanted you to know. I have 60 episodes of it's Papa Paxton.
The end of a Cameron Crowe movie.
Yes, I have 60 episodes of Papa Paxton that I can go back and watch and keep his memory alive for at least that long. So Cargill, where can people find you on it?
You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/massaworm. That's MASSAWYRM. And on Facebook, facebook.com/massaworm.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter at Bri Guy Salisbury or on Facebook, facebook.com/Brian Salisbury Critic. Bill Paxton, we will definitely miss you. I think that without you, this planet is a couple of cans short of a six pack. And yes, game over, man. But you know what? You won.